everybody, and welcome back to Sapphic Survival Guide, where we are happy to be queer to answer your questions. I'm Gina.
And I'm Cheyenne.
And class is now in session. We have a great guest today, my friend, coworker, and listener of our podcast. Kasera, can you introduce yourself to everybody?
Of course. My name is Kasera, she, her. I am a mother. I am queer. I am a PhD student. I am in tech. I'm a lot of things, and I am mostly excited to be here.
Aww.
Yeah. When we met, because we work together, or I mean, we work for the same company. We don't really work together anymore. But when we met, interestingly, we were both in relationships with men, and now we are not. So can you take us through that queer journey that you went on to get here?
Yes, I was absolutely and predominantly in relationships with men for most of my life, but there was still a very large part of my identity where I identified for a long time as bisexual. And now, you know, in my professional bio, when I'm introduced for stage engagements and for public speaking, it says, not only do I like to think outside of the box, but as if the box had never existed in the first place. And so now I'm queer. It's just all that I say because I think it makes it ambiguous enough. But yes, I am very happily in a relationship with a woman now.
And you came out while being married to somebody else. Are you okay to talk through kind of like that journey?
Yeah, of course. So I actually, within like, I'm going to say 3 months of my ex-husband and I being together, we were not, of course, married then, but I was on stage making out with the female lead singer of a band. So I didn't think I really needed to come out, but there was like a formal conversation that occurred probably about 5 years ago where I was like, hey, if you didn't get it then, at any point since, I am queer. And most of my like earliest sexual experiences were actually with girls. Well, I can't say women, but girls, right? And so, yes, there was a coming out within my marriage and some exploration there. And we are now, you know, officially divorced. And this, you know, the coming out didn't do it, but the coming out and then exploring and realizing so much about myself in that time, I guess it did need to be said, because then it really forced me to take a look at myself and what I wanted and my desires. And so, yeah, it's been quite a journey.
How long have you been divorced for?
On paper, 3 months.
Okay, well, how long were you separated for?
You separated for over a year.
Over a year. Okay. Well, congratulations. That's exciting.
And I mean, to be fair, formally separated, but then about the last 2 years of the marriage, things were open and I was with women in that time.
Yeah. Do you think you'd want to explore non-monogamy again, or do you think it was like a product of that relationship specifically?
Oh, Cheyenne, that's such a good question, and one that I have, I think, in all the way up until I met my current partner, I was still very open to non-monogamy. And I think it's because this is going to get like kind of, oh, I forgot to tell everybody that I'm a Sagittarius. I think that matters.
Yeah, that's. I feel like that's going to lead into this next.
I think that matters.
I think that matters. She's a fire sign. Okay. So there's something about comp het that was inside of me for so long that prevented me, like, I very openly, and even to myself, like, I would give maybe 50% of my, like, heart to a relationship because it felt safe. I was like, ah, like, I can love this person. I can care about this person. It wasn't until I met my current partner that I was like, this person deserves 100%. And for her and for us, 100% meant monogamy is what that meant.
Yeah. That's really interesting because I dated someone who was married and they kind of felt that way with me when we were together. And it's interesting because I can't imagine marrying someone and being like, oh, but like, we're not gonna all the way go there. But I think it's also like, you know, you meet someone new and you're like, oh, I can actually love to like an even deeper level than I thought before. But it's, I think it's interesting how many people get married and then they're like, actually, I could love someone way more than you. Even though I like wanted, I thought this was like the peak maybe. So that's really interesting. I don't know if that's like how you experience it, but just
I think I loved with what I was capable of loving with at the time.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like I wouldn't say that I definitely didn't give. And I think I actually listened to your Valentine's Day podcast recently about giving. And it's so interesting when I think of, I know that, you know, love languages are debatable and there's many more than the five that are described in the most famous text, and that, you know, there's a lot. But when I think of myself in most of my prior relationships, like my number one love language was acts of service. And that's like, as a mother and as a woman, it was me basically begging you to like do the fucking dishes or something. Mm-hmm. Right. And so like you got to get a bunch of gifts from me and words of affirmation and all of these things. And I got the dishes. Right. So like, I think love in those heteronormative relationships is often skewed in a lot of ways because of those things, especially motherhood impacting. And yeah, so now in this current relationship, there's none of that. And it's very interesting to see who I am and what I desire. And it's so different in this love.
This might be too specific, but is there anything specifically that you have noticed that you could share that has changed? Okay.
So it was actually one of the early, for me, I actually, again, listening to this podcast, one of you had brought up the, you know, there's Compet and then that the guide. What is that? Is it called the Compet guide?
Oh, that lesbian master doc?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, master doc, yes. So that actually, like, just popping into there and reading some of the questions that they encouraged you to ask yourself, right? I had noticed that so I didn't have any true relationships while I was in my marriage. A lot of them were very sexual, and it was just, you know, I did form, of course, connections with people, but it wasn't a true relationship because between being a mom, being a wife, being a working woman, being a student, I didn't have the time to truly give to someone what they needed. Right. But what I did recognize is that in those connections, the thing that it was so natural for me to touch, physical touch, it was so natural for me to desire that touch. And in zero of my heteronormative relationships did I desire physical touch at any point. And I thought, like, it's just the bottom of my list, right? It's just the thing. It's just not me. I'm just an acts of service girly. I just want you to do the dishes. Turns out that's absolutely not the case. So yeah, that one of the bigger things that I realized is like, wow, not only do I really want to touch this person, but when they reach across and like touch me in the car, I don't like, right? I don't like
flinch. Cringe.
So yeah, that was one of the really big things that made me think, do I even know who I am and what I want?
Yeah.
That's crazy that it's like the Compet is so layered that it takes, I think, so long to ask the right questions and really come to, I don't know, all of that in your own head. Now, how did you explain this to your sons?
My boys. So the really great news is that they grew up within a certain structure until this point, but there was never any, like, we have books about, you know, I bought a book from a museum in Philadelphia that describes how babies are made in every way. IVF, you know, heterosexual relationships, adoption. So when they learned about that, they didn't just learn that like mom and dad fall in love and have a baby. That was not at all their experience. So when I told them, and to be fair, my ex and I now have a wonderful relationship. And I will also say that the divorce wasn't my idea.
Interesting.
Yeah.
I don't know if I knew that.
So because of, again, content and all of the things, I would have stayed in that relationship forever solely because I didn't want to give up 50% of my kids' lives.
Mm. Well, family's always been so, like, part of your brand, really, is, like, your family kind of gal, you know?
Yeah. Like, I literally nursed both of my kids until they were 2.5. Like, I'm obsessed with my children. And so the idea of giving up any time with them, that is what was... Like, I was like, I will spend every dollar I have. I will go to the ends of the earth to figure out how to make this specific relationship mm-hmm. work so that these kids are in this house all of the time. Mm-hmm. That is not the answer. So to anybody listening, he made the hard decision, but he made the right one. Sure. And I see it so much. I see it every day. I'm going to answer your question now, and then we can dive into some of that. But I didn't intend, you know, telling the kids about the divorce was a completely separate story. It wasn't, we are getting a divorce because of, mm-hmm. it was, daddy is moving out. You are now going to, I bought books, which is like, I guess, how I communicate with them. I bought books to say like, you're now going to have two homes. And mm-hmm. My ex and I, we didn't fight. So a lot of divorce books are like, when mom and dad are arguing, like mm-hmm. there was none of that. It was just to them one day, we were no longer living together. Mm-hmm. I then, because my sexual identity was so much of his decision, and because he could realize that the love that we had would never be enough for either of us, that he deserved more, that I deserved more, my identity was then a part of his story. So I had to come to, I was outed very publicly and often, and it was a struggle.
Often, yeah.
Yep. So I came out to the kids because I didn't want them to hear it at school. I didn't want them to hear it from other people. And mm-hmm. it was a non-issue. Like I spent, again, like if you can't tell already, I was reading, I was consuming, I was researching, I was trying to figure out all the ways to do this well and to do this effectively. Mm-hmm. And I was just like, so listen, do you know that book about how sometimes, you know, mommies are with daddies, sometimes mommies are with mommies, you know, mommy is going to be exploring relationships with women, you know, someday I'm going to mm-hmm. have girlfriends. And so my oldest son, he's incredibly smart. I call him young Sheldon. And he was like, so mom, if dad marries another woman and you marry a woman, I'm going to have 3 moms. And I was like, you're going to have 1 mom. And if the other women that mom and dad form relationships with want to be mother figures and want to be called mom someday, then yes, you could potentially have 3 moms. And they're just
honestly
like,
that's cool. The best case scenario,
right
who wouldn't like, want like 3 moms. I mean, okay, the there most are people who wouldn't want 3 moms, but like ideally that is the best outcome.
Right.
Yeah, right, more love is not going to be a bad thing in the eyes of a child.
100%. And that and so for them, they like my youngest was like, awesome, can I ride my 4-wheeler now? And I was like, yes, you can. So he's 4. He was 4 at the time. My oldest was 6 or 7. So yeah, again, it because they didn't grow up with like, they didn't grow up with content, they didn't grow up with any religious undertones, they didn't grow up with anything to undo. They were just like mm-hmm. cool. And so when they, it's interesting because I would have girlfriends come over, just like female friends, and they would be like, mm-hmm. is this your girlfriend? I'd be like, nope, this is just a friend. They'd be like, okay, just stay sitting here.
So funny.
It. Yeah. And now, you know, with my girlfriend, with my partner, they very much so know that, you know, they're, and it was in, so when I said there were a lot of signs about them growing up in the home that they were growing up in before not being the answer, as I began to show physical affection for my girlfriend in front of them, they hadn't really seen that side of me with their father. It wasn't something that was often done because of so many reasons, but you know, mainly the one that I just shared. And so one time we were in the car and the kids are in the back seat, and I just like reached over and had my hand on her leg, and my youngest was like, "Mom, why are you touching her leg?" And I was like, "Oh, I just wanted to know that like, I care about her while I'm driving the car." And he was like, Okay.
My best friend is also in the process of getting divorced and has a child, and like so many of these stories are like textbook across the board. Like, I'm sure so many queer parents experience those kinds of conversations with their kids. Like, they're just like, what are you doing? Yeah. Or they're like, no, don't hug her, hug me.
Yeah, there has been, I mean, my youngest definitely, his, oh my gosh, like physical touch is his all day. He just wants to be like loved and held. And so he requires a lot of that from her as well, which is cute. And the jealousy is gone now, which is nice.
Do you feel like your parenting style has changed at all from like your marriage to now the current relationship and coming, like, how is that different?
These are such good questions. Yes. So I'll say that early on, I mean, there was a shift in me after my second was born, because I realized I couldn't give all and everything to one. So I had to divide. Mm-hmm. And then there was a shift when I realized, I actually read Untamed by Glennon Doyle. Mm-hmm. And there was a specific part where she talked about martyrdom in motherhood, and like, you don't need to like lay down your life and slowly die in front of your children for them to think that you're a good mom. And I was like, holy fucking shit. She is right. Like, these kids, the only thing that they know about me is that I am mom. And so after I finished that book in 2020, I immediately applied to an MBA program. I started to figure out like, how can I reclaim myself and like who Kasara is outside of motherhood? So then I was still like, I was very much so a gentle parent. I didn't want to parent like my parents parented, but I started to realize that I was giving too much still, and I was being manipulated very easily. And it did take some external forces to really show that. But one of the biggest things was my ex-husband moving out meant that I realized the disciplinarian moved out. Like, I was so much the caregiver, right? Mm-hmm. And so, like, things
were Dad's gonna be the like, bad guy. Yeah. That's like, so funny, because that's how my parents were so much. Like, my mom would purposely be like, go ask your dad, so that he would say no, even though she wanted to say no.
Yeah, right. And it's like, I'm the gentle parent, but like, he's gonna lay down the law, and now the law is gone. And I'm like, oh God, what do I do with these kids? They're gonna like run the roost. So that took a lot for me to be like, okay, I'm gonna need to be like, and I heard so much in the beginning, like, why are you being so mean? Why are you acting like this? And like, why are you? And it's like, okay, we just need to reset some boundaries. Mm-hmm. And then two, if I'm being honest, the guilt of like, even though it wasn't my decision, it felt like it was my fault. And so with all of these changes in their life, it's like, well, I need to like do better and be better. And every time we're together, it needs to be like 100%, because now I only have 50%, and it needs to be so 140%. But now things have really calmed down. And honestly, having a partner who can see things and she's like, you do realize that like, it, like, you said no 6 times and then they still got what they wanted. So it's been very interesting to have somebody else's perspective too, really shaping how the household is run. But yes, everything has absolutely changed.
Yeah. When you first introduced your partner to the kids, or I don't know if you were involved with anyone else before this partner, but like, at what point did you decide to introduce her as your girlfriend? Because, not gonna lie, I have dated a few moms in my day, back in my day, didn't meet all their kids, wasn't super serious with all of them. So I guess, and obviously it's gonna vary from parent to parent, but like, how did you know you were like ready to take that next step and introduce them in that way?
It's a great question. So I think I've said that to all your questions, by the way. So
that's fine. We'll take it.
You're like, we know. Those are the only kind of yes. So I think it took, I introduced her fairly early, actually, but it was not for the kids. It was for her, because she is a childless woman who, she came out around the same age as me, but she's older than me by about 13 years. So yeah, she looks so good.
Not look 13 years older than you, that's for sure. She looks great.
So yeah, she's been, you know, not just single, but not with women who had children mm-hmm. in her history. So I didn't want any surprises. I just wanted to be like, hey, you need to see everything that you're getting yourself into, mm-hmm. and then you can decide if you want to stay. So she was around the kids early and quite a few times. And again, the kids have, we have a lot of friends. I have people who are here and then they move away. So at no point was I like, oh no, I need to wait 6 months for them to meet a person to make sure that, like, it wasn't like that for me. I just wanted to make sure that she knew their personalities, exactly who they were, how the house was run, so that she could make the decision. And then once we had a lot of those conversations, she and I was then able to tell the kids, you know, this is a person who's going to be in your life as mom's girlfriend and not as just a friend. And they're like, cool.
That's interesting, because I feel like there's like pros and cons to doing it both ways. And what we hear a lot of the time is like, oh, you don't want to introduce your kids to like a parade of people, and then they
revolving doors.
Yeah. And then they are like left with all these questions and no answers. But then also, I feel like it would suck if you had gotten to know your partner and you formed an intimate connection, and then they weren't really feeling the kid dynamic, but they tried to make it work just because, you know, you came with the kids, and that kind of like was an informed decision making process instead of like, oh, I'm emotionally invested, maybe I can make this work. And I feel like that's more traumatizing for all of you than to be like, mommy's friend dipped out after hanging out with us a few times before you're like heartbroken. Yeah.
And I think maybe if I hadn't had so many experiences in the couple of years that things were open at the end of my marriage, that and the kids didn't meet any of them, with the exception of like later. So, but yes, there, I didn't introduce anyone that I knew wasn't going to stick around or that I didn't intend to keep around. Right. And because I knew so early that I was, you know, I could really, really love this woman, it felt safe. And so, yeah, I think I made the right decision in this instance, but you're so right that that is not the correct plan for every for every relationship or for every family.
Yeah, I only introduced my parents like in historically to people who were going to be around long term, because I was like, you don't need to know these people who are going to be here for like a month. Like, nope, we're not doing that.
How did the rest of your family or the people in your lives or the people in your kids' lives, how did they respond to you coming out and dating a woman?
So nobody was surprised, which surprised me. But there have been a lot of, I think, signs. And I came out, again, I came out as bisexual years ago. And it wasn't just to my ex-husband. It was, I was like, I don't know that this needs to be said, but hey, like, sorority girl in college, you guys had an episode on that too. So, come on. But I was on, actually a decade ago, I was on a cruise ship with my aunt, and there were a group of lesbians on the boat. And at the time, like, my aunt and I, it sounds weird that like my aunt, but we were both single and like drunk the entire time and had a ton of fun. So yeah, it was great. And we were hooking up with people. And at one point she was like, are you sure you don't like the guy that I'm hooking up with? And I was like, I am 10 times more likely to hook up with that entire group of women than the man. So like, that was my coming out to her. And she was like, oh. And then, you know, over the last few years, like, I would casually drop. My mom was actually the last person I told. And she, so I grew up in a very religious, I had a very religious upbringing. All of that has since disbanded, which was, you know, great for all of us. But
like, your family's not even religious anymore?
No.
Okay, that, interesting.
Wow. Yeah, which made all of this probably better and easier. But so coming out to her as a bisexual was like a whole thing, because she was super mad that she was the last person to know. She was really upset with me. She's like, I feel like you've just been hiding yourself from me your entire life. And I was like, you probably shouldn't have force fed me all of this other stuff, and I would have felt more comfortable. So, but it really was a turning point in our relationship, because then I, you know, when this all happened, she was the first person I called. And even when the marriage opened, I told her, I was very transparent. So for this to be the outcome, again, it was not surprising to anyone. I think people were definitely worried. They wanted to make sure that, like, you know, my ex-husband was okay, that the kids were going to be okay. They wanted, you know, they knew that a lot of these changes would have a big impact, but there's been a ton of support. And now, you know, we're not at the point where, like, my ex-husband comes to, like, holidays or anything, mm-hmm. but he's around. And we're at sports together. We're all there. We're at birthday parties together. So we've gotten there, I think.
It's like a nice little kumbaya moment, it feels like.
Yeah. It's all, if you would have told me 20 years ago that this would be how things, I would have never believed you. But I'm so happy.
When you meet, like, other parents that are parents of your kids' friends and stuff, do you feel like there's things you can really point to and be like, that's what, like, hetero couples or, like, hetero parents are not doing right?
So much, but but I will say I'm in a very small town in Northeast Pennsylvania, and there, I think, like, I can count on one hand the number of just, like, out gay people there are in this entire area. So one of my biggest concerns for the kids specifically was the judgment, right? And, like, if, you know, like, no, you can't go over to X child's house because there's two women living there, right? Mm-hmm. But surprisingly, that hasn't been the, like, so many people have been supportive and awesome about everything. I will say, in a lot of heteronormative relationships, mine included, early on, gender roles, of course, I think because of where I live, so much of that is still perpetuated and still persists. And there are so many unhappy, unfulfilled women that are doing it all and carrying the entire load, and the mental load, the household load, and in some instances, they're even the breadwinners, so the financial load. So yeah, I think that is one of the biggest things. And then two, the fact that I am such an anomaly now in this area, I think that's not discussed. Like, the book that I bought my kids to tell them about how babies are made is not the book that is being utilized in this area. So I think that's the other thing is, like, even my best friend, when, you know, my girlfriend and I showed up at the Halloween party that they were throwing, we kissed, and she was like, oh, she's like, I haven't even talked to the kids yet. Like, where are the kids?
Girl, that's on you.
Right. Right. So yeah, I would say, specifically in my area, there's a lot, but, more broadly, just the gender roles, I think, that still persist are absurd.
I can see that. Yeah, for sure. This might be kind of a hard question to answer, to be honest, but I did put out to our listeners, like, hey, we're having a queer parent. What questions do you have? And somebody did ask, what advice do you have for changing pronouns or names as a parent? The kids are having trouble adjusting, which obviously I don't think you could speak to this specific example, but what would you give for any change really that kids are having trouble adjusting to, and, like, new norms, that kind of thing?
I think time. I mean, honestly, I think in every single example that I can think of, including my own, the only thing that has made things easier is just time and, you know, grace with them, and the fact that they had a completely, you know, a certain experience for a certain amount of time, and now we're adjusting. And I think too, even the conversation of, like, asking them, hey, I see you're struggling. Are you struggling on purpose? Are you struggling simply, you know, because you're forgetting? What is happening here? Are you rebelling in some way because you don't like this change or because you don't understand it? And what questions do you have for me if that is the case? I think communication is key there.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, not to speak for you both, but don't you wish our parents talked to us like that when we were kids? I'm just assuming that yours didn't. Mine definitely did it, but it's just, like, just so much confusion would have been cleared up. And I don't know, childhood would be so much easier if like gentle parenting was practiced more.
Yeah. Yeah, I had a lot of harsh parenting, but you know, what do they say? Builds character or something. Maybe funny. I don't know. I recommend it.
gave us a good sense of humor for sure. My brother and I both have it. But I would love to hear what advice either of you have for that parent that asked that question, if it's different.
I'm just like, I'm not great with kids or like parenting because it's never something I wanted to do. But just having had parents, I just think like honesty and transparency goes a really long way. I feel like it wasn't until I was like an adult that my parents really started talking to me like on a level where I was like, okay, I'm getting the full picture. And I just think like the sooner you kind of make them feel like you're not just an authority figure, you're also on their team, if that makes sense. Like, I think the better, because I just remember being younger and feeling like, I don't know that I can ask these questions. Mm-hmm. And then once I got old enough, I was like, I don't really care if I can ask these questions. Like, you're the one who has the answer, so you're gonna like answer it for me. Mm-hmm. So I think, yeah, like as much transparency as makes sense for whatever like age they are.
Yeah, that was kind of going to be my advice too. Like, I think it should be tailored towards age appropriateness and what the kid's mind can understand at their development level. Because I think a lot of the time people will like ascribe these thought patterns or behavior patterns to children who don't know that they're doing that or aren't doing that or just like trying to get their needs met, and it's coming across a certain way to us because we're adults and we've experienced it, like different things, like manipulatively, or I don't know, just I think there needs to be a lot more education about what kids can and can't understand at different age ranges.
Yeah, sometimes they surprise you, I think, too, like with what kids understand and actually comprehend. And I don't know, even I was close with my cousins who live in Arizona, and they have a 3-year-old, and my girlfriend and I babysat him for one weekend, which let me tell you was wildly overwhelming. I just know I was never meant to be a parent, and that's okay. I'll be a great aunt, great cousin, you know, the babysitter kind of role, the fun person, hand the back at the end of the day. But I was kind of like thinking like, I wonder what he understands about my girlfriend and I's relationship. He definitely sees us interacting the same way his parents interact, but I don't believe they sat down and were like, hey, buddy, like Gina's going to be here with her girlfriend, because I don't think he like, in his eyes, it's just like, here's two people, here's two other people, like, you know? And so at some point he might realize, oh yeah, that was Gina's girlfriend, but I don't know, he's 3.5 right now. So I think he just thinks these are the people who fed me today.
Mm-hmm.
And played
100%.
It took me until I was 14 to realize my grandparents' next door neighbors were lesbians. I just thought they were roommates. I didn't know. No one told me. And then I was like,
roommates.
Oh my God, they're not just roommates. And all my family were like, yeah, you didn't know. And I was like, no, no one told me. I didn't know. Like, I didn't just figure it out.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
I think too, I, you know, a plug, simply because I'm an AI girl. And that's what I'm studying. So there are so many resources now, especially certain models. Like there's a model called Latimer.ai, and it is one of the least biased models. It is focused with like Black and Brown history woven into it. There's LGBTQ history woven in. And so it's very specific, which is why that's the model I'm recommending. But you could very easily go to one of these generative AI models and simply say, I have an X-year-old and an X-year-old, and I'm attempting to change my pronouns, or I am trying to get them to call me a different name. And, you know, so how can I have this conversation? What questions can I ask? And technology will help you have that conversation as well.
Hell yeah. Giant, just so that you understand, well, and our listeners, because Sarah and I at one point did the same job, and I'm still doing that job, and Sarah's like running the company now. Like, she's like a spokesperson and is like at these conferences. But my question in terms of like your career life, because that is also a huge part, I feel like, of your identity, your brand, is just like being really career driven. Do you see like having to continuously come out at work? Do you talk about queerness at work? Or is that just like, hey, I'm here to focus on AI and technology, and that's like, that's it?
Yeah. So I definitely, in early on, I just wasn't saying anything. Like, I'm here, I'm showing up. When people would come up to me and ask specifically about, you know, how is so-and-so, how are the kids, how's the family, I would be very transparent and say, mm-hmm. I mean, you know, there was a point where I was like, do I need to send out like a press release? Because I would go to these things and they're like, oh my God, I had no idea. And I'm like, I know, because we haven't talked, or like there wasn't like a memo mm-hmm. sent out to the company, like, hey, by the way, this person went through a few life changes. So there has been a constant coming out at work, and I'm okay with it. I think there's also, you know, I had an experience at work as all of this was happening. And I actually had the opportunity to tell the woman at an event that I was recently at, but she was speaking casually and doesn't really have a brand in our organization for being queer. She is. And in like casually in conversation with me, she dropped, you know, oh, my wife is actually at home with the dogs. And I was just like, oh, like, I want to say that someday. Like, I can't say that right now. And like, it just like hit me. And so like her openness triggered something in me. And so I'm hoping that my openness and for mm-hmm. people to see that, not only can you be a thing, but you could have been one thing and now you can be another thing, and that's okay. And like, things still work out and you can still maintain your job and your relationships and all those things. So yes, constant coming out.
Yeah. Well, is there any advice you have, like, that you would want to give either a younger version of yourself or someone who's kind of in, because I feel like the path that you took is one that's simultaneously unique because everyone's is, but also, you know, it's not the first time that somebody's been married to a man and then something happens and now they're divorced and dating women, you know? So what kind of advice would you give people who end up in something like that, or that you wish you had known, you know, 10 years ago kind of thing?
I think I would say the biggest component was, even with all of the insight that I had, everything that I knew, the selflessness of women and of mothers, I think will continue to keep women where they are and like keep them planted, because, you know, again, so I listened to the podcast, you know, I listened to every episode of Sapphic Survival Guide. I read the master doc. I researched Comphet. Mm-hmm. I, you know, went through years of therapy and internal family systems to uncover the reasons why I was either, you know, committing infidelity or ethical non-monogamy in every relationship that I've ever had. And even with all of that, I was still like, but no, I could just stay here and be their mom 100% of the time. Mm-hmm. And that will be what is best for them. So you can undo so much, but then there's still this feeling that like you owe your kids something, or you owe your kids consistency or stability, especially if you came from what I came from, in a very destabilized environment. So the biggest advice that I would give is like, make that hard decision and understand that your children will, they are so resilient. They are so smart and so adaptable. And it's interesting because of, you know, the life that I had growing up, I wanted to give my kids everything. And I thought that by doing this, I was somehow giving them trauma and I was giving them something that, but now I can look back and think, you know, they would have carried a perception of love with them for the rest of their lives. Like, they never would have truly seen what their authentic mother looks like or what authentic love looks like. They never would have seen two people kissing over coffee in the morning because I wasn't giving that to them. Mm-hmm. And so they, like, that is trauma, right? Like, that would have been a lot of undoing for them. And as the great Brene Brown says, even her kids are going to need therapy. So like, we're all, yeah. You know, they all end up there anyway. So yeah, I would say to my younger self and to any woman listening to this, whether you're, you know, going through this internal realization yourself as a late in life, or if you're a parent that thinks that you need to be that martyr and lay down your life, and you know, you can wait to come out until your kids are 18. Not only are you doing yourself a disservice, but everybody in your life, like everyone is owed this. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. I love that. I couldn't agree more. Like, everybody benefits when everyone's who they want to be and how they want to be, like.
Mm-hmm. And I know you kind of said the same thing at the beginning of the episode, and I was thinking then and now how the selflessness almost leads to selfishness, because I feel like it breeds a lot of resentment in the kids, in the partner, in the parent, like in yourself. And I feel like that resentment is just gonna like lead to more like toxic interpersonal relationships that could have been avoided if, you know. But obviously it's easier said than done to just be like, yeah, just leave your partner of 10 years and move out on your own and be a single parent. But I think as someone with parents who are not together and haven't been together since I was 10, I can't imagine what my life would have been like with them together. And they didn't even have like a particularly toxic relationship, but it just like, as an adult, I can see now that what was best for my parents was what was best for me. And hopefully your kids can look back on your decision, your ex-husband's decision, and, you know, realize like, oh, my mom got to be happy because of that decision. So, yeah.
And early, so every day that I have them, I pick them up from school and I say, tell me two things you love and, you know, one thing that you didn't like about today so that we can discuss. And in our lives, I've said that too. Like, hey, tell me two things that you really like about what is happening with our new lives and the way that we live. And tell me something that you think maybe mom and dad could work on and do better. And in the beginning, it was constantly like, oh, I just wish you guys lived together again. I wish you guys. And then I would ask why. And they would say like, oh, so we could all spend time together. And then I'd dive into like, but were we ever spending time together? And they'd be like, well, no. So, so now it's been almost a year. And I actually just last month asked my oldest, you know, my youngest is still like, I get to have a dirt bike at dad's house and a four wheeler here. Like, I'm kidding.
this is priorities.
Yes. But my oldest is like, mom, I can't think of anything that I don't like. Like, I'm like, so you feel really loved and supported. He's like, I think I feel more loved and supported. Aww. Because like my ex has a girlfriend, you know, and so it took some time, but again, everybody got there and things are great. And to your exact point, it was selflessness that then verged on selfishness. Cause I was like, how are they going to survive without me for half of the time? Like, they need me half of, like, 100% of the time. And they don't. They just needed to be loved and supported 100% of the time by somebody. And they are.
Take a shot every time I tear up when we have a guest. It's like,
I know.
9 times out of 10.
I think we like got you in such a sweet moment too. And like, in this period of your life, cause I know it's been a journey and it seems like this is just like where you were supposed to end up. So I'm happy that this is like the version of you we got to interview. Cause yeah, everything you said was really insightful and I'm so about it. So I don't know if you want people to follow you or like if they want to, is there anything you want to plug for the people?
Yeah, I mean, you can find me out on Instagram and see how hot my girlfriend is because we talked about it, KB Weinrich. And if you want to find me on LinkedIn and, you know, read all the things that I do regarding anthropology and artificial intelligence, Kasara Weinrich there.
Thank you. And if you have any questions for us for future episodes, you can give us a call at 724-209-7372. You can leave us a message. If you leave us a voice message, we might play it back on an episode, which would be really fun. You can also send us questions to sapphicsurvivalguide@gmail.com. And you can find us on social media at Sapphic Survival Guide on every platform except for X, which is just at Sapphic Survival. And you can find me, Cheyenne, at Hot Mess Bean on pretty much any social media platform.
And you can find me anywhere online at The Libregina, including my website, thelibregina.com. And with that, class is now dismissed.